Hey East Meets West listeners, in this week's episode, Albert and I look back on crypto and blockchain being one of the biggest trends of the pandemic and explain the current state of the industry and whether there's any potential left in the underlying technology. We also look at some of the news surrounding crypto trading platform Binance. As always, keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to the East Meets West podcast, a podcast about understanding Asia tech and how Asia tech affects the world. My name is Dan. As always, joining me is Albert. Keen listeners might have noticed I've started dropping off the Albert from Astral Ventures in the introduction. Albert, do you want to give a little update to the listeners?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm no longer at Astral. I'm trying to find my next role. You know, I appreciate the well wishes to everyone who was listening and being like, I wonder where Albert's working. I wonder if he's got a job. No. Fortunately, the tech bust or the tech, the downturn has impacted me too.
I got to say, Albert, that when I was talking to you the other week and you were telling me about it, I was pretty encouraged by the fact that within a couple of days, you had a fistful of offers from multiple places to offer you a job. And they all seemed to be sort of scrambling to get you in the door. So you're definitely going to land on your feet, and I'm really interested and excited to see where you're ending up next to apply your skills.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I think worth knowing, Mr. Worldwide, where are you at the moment?
I'm back in Jakarta, but as you know, I just came back from Singapore. Really, really loved just sort of a quick one-nighter over in Singapore. Super clean, super tidy. It was kind of like going to Jakarta, what I would expect to be, you know, 10, 15 years in the future. It's a place, Albert, that I think we should visit together just because it's so dynamic, so much tech, so much finance happening there.
Oh, please let me know whenever you want. I love it. I think it's like, it's so funny because when I was there at the end of last year, I was in the Philippines for like a couple of weeks, and then I was in Singapore for a few days, and it was like Philippines, like not super clean. And then you get to Singapore and it's like, bam, this place is clean. It just feels different to the rest of Asia.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if we go back to our friend Amit, who maybe kind of started off our trend towards Asia tech, what did he call the greatest startup in sort of history? Singapore, the country. It's definitely a place that we should check out. But Albert, let's get into this week's episode. We're kind of looking at an update to what's happening in the crypto blockchain field, particularly with a bit of an emphasis on Binance, which has been in the news recently. The reason this one was pretty germane to me or interesting to me was we've just had a couple episodes on ChatGPT. It's very clear that 2023 is the year of ChatGPT and its equivalents, generative AI, which makes you kind of think about, well, what were the other recent sort of bubbles and trends? And a couple of years ago, all anyone was talking about is Bitcoin, is crypto, is blockchain. So I kind of want to do a quick episode just catching us up on where things are at, where things are going, and what went wrong. Other learnings we can take away from the frenzy that was Bitcoin and crypto that we can then just keep an eye on when we're talking about ChatGPT and some of the new innovations coming through.
Yeah, I think short answer, I think yes, there was a bubble, and like obviously that's burst a bit, and I think we'll talk about it, but there's been like an erosion of trust in the space, which is kind of ironic because it's like obviously like inherently kind of like spivvy and untrustworthy parts of like the asset class as a whole. And like, yes, I think it will continue to like build and people will continue to do interesting things without the noise and distractions. But like, that's kind of my short take. What's yours?
Yeah. What I found quite interesting was A16Z released a sort of 2023 report into the state of crypto, which is really sort of useful just to get a high level understanding of where the industry's at. And two things that really stood out to me from that report is one, that there are now more users on the blockchain than ever before. And two, when you're looking at the developers, you know, the actual tech employees working in the industry, it's not like there's been a huge outflow where there's been a brain drain where they've all been going to AI or some other place. they're all kind of sticking with the industry, and there's actually sort of more developers in the industry than before. And so to me, that's a really useful baseline just to understand that this crypto winter has kind of wiped out probably the people out there looking for a quick buck. But at the infrastructure layer, there's a lot of people still working to use crypto, use blockchain technology to create new products and new innovations, which I think has always been the weakness of, you know, the last couple of years of narratives about crypto and blockchain. Was it was so focused on this kind of securities element to it of trading these crypto coins and tokens, rather than there actually being a real tangible use case, which if you go back to ChatGPT, there's so clearly a use case there in comparison.
Yeah, I think that that is an accurate description of what's happened. I think also there was a pretty significant dip at the end of last year that was driven by a number of different things. One was like the Fed hiking rates in the US, and then subsequently, like, you know, other reserve banks, et cetera, around the world following suit. And that obviously had an impact on crypto as an asset class that people are allocating to, even though, you know, some people thought Bitcoin was like immune to inflation. It was obviously not correct. I think the second thing was like with FTX and all the resulting noise around that scandal, there's like an erosion of trust within like these like big institutions like FTX and then Binance, which we'll talk about, which then led to a lot of people like pulling out of crypto as an asset.
Yeah, and you can even see that now where for the year, crypto or Bitcoin as an example, as a proxy, is up about 50%. But if you look at the highs from during COVID, it is still down significantly from that point. So, you know, I think that's a sign that the underlying infrastructure, technology and innovations there are resilient. There's something there. But gone are those days of those heady sort of evaluations without much substance beneath them.
Yeah, I think it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy when you have smart people working on different things that one of them is going to work. I think you're right to like separate. There's like an asset here that you can put money into, and there's like speculation around that asset. And then there's like the underlying technology that people are like building on top of or leveraging. I think that the key thing when you compare it to something like AI at the top of the pod and lack of that uptake is that the on-ramp for crypto actually sucks versus like the on-ramp for AI is actually much easier to use. So like for a consumer, the on-ramp to AI was ChatGPT. And that's like you log in. Sometimes you didn't have to log in, but like you log in, you just type a question, it tells you straight away. Like that is a really slick and easy user interface. Like crypto, it's like you go through that like process of like building a wallet, and then it takes a lot of time to build a wallet. It's not easy. And then you get like a 50 digit like wallet ID. And then if you want to try to send money to things, like it's quite complicated. And then it takes a clip of it. So the on-ramp actually sucks for crypto as a consumer. And then if you're trying to build within crypto, the on-ramp also sucks because there's like a heavy dev push. It's not particularly easy to use. But with AI, it's actually much easier to build something on-ramped because you can easily plug OpenAI's API into your business. And that's why we've seen a lot of businesses quickly using and building AI into their products, is that the on-ramp is actually just two lines of code.
Great point about accessibility, which is why, you know, ChatGPT and generative AI, I think, is the zeitgeist at the moment, and is so easy for people not just to hear about in news, but then actively try it out, you know, within a couple of minutes of Googling ChatGPT and logging in. I guess if we take that as an example, one of the interesting things that I think is still sort of working away is when we look at the applications of blockchain for more sort of consumer retail platforms, where there seems to be, I guess, a lot of room for movement, and this is a slide in the A16Z crypto report, is when you're looking at some of those big distribution platforms. So if you're thinking about social media, you've got Facebook and Instagram, YouTube for videos, Spotify for music, and then obviously the Apple App Store for apps. All of these big sort of network platforms take a clip from things that are on there, for YouTube, for instance, you know, they're taking a 45% clip, Spotify 30%, Apple App Store 30% as well. When you look at comparative platforms that are just purely sort of on Web3 using blockchain, OpenSea, Uniswap, they're in the sort of single digit percents or even less. And you think about if the technology can be applied in that way, there's just so much margin then up for grabs from potentially creators or even other intermediary businesses as well. That to me is where there's a lot of movement still to go for some of the blockchain applications.
Yeah, I think there was this hypothesis like last year or the year before that, that if you're a trader, you can leverage the infrastructure layer to then like circumvent some of these by issuing like tokens or digital assets. So like if you're a musician, instead of using Spotify for your like distribution platform, you can distribute your music online and then you would like wrap around a digital asset that was tied on chain so that that was like proof that that asset was real. So like for image, video, music, etc., you can buy like black metal and an NFT of that music instead of streaming on Spotify. I think the reason why it hasn't worked yet is like one, like it hasn't solved the distribution problem. Like everyone's on Spotify, almost everyone's on Spotify. Okay. Like there's millions of users on Spotify. So like if you're an artist, you can easily distribute your music through that. So even though there's like a perverse incentive that you lose a bit of take rate, you get to like distribute your music. The other thing again just goes to the on-ramp. Like if you're a content creator, you just want to focus on like making music. You don't want to focus on like trying to fiddle on how you build, embed crypto or that technology into your content. I think that's why it hasn't worked yet.
Well, 100%. If we even just look at our podcast as an example, Albert, the ease in which we can, you know, with a bit of hardware, with microphones, record the pod and then upload it through, you know, Spotify's essentially platform, it's super easy. And all it takes is signing up to an account and then uploading with some internet. That wouldn't happen. I don't think we would have a podcast if we had to go through some of the hoops that you have to onboard with blockchain, crypto, etc.
Yeah. And the inverse is also true, which is not the inverse, but the other side of the coin, which is like, if you're say Taylor Swift and you've got hundreds of millions of fans around the world, like they don't want to go through some like hard to use on-ramp to access her music. And that just causes more friction to like listening to Taylor Swift. So I think that's why it hasn't worked yet.
Well, that's an interesting one to me, because my theory would be actually that those will be the first movers, where distribution is not a problem. You know, say you're a superstar, you've got your legions of fans, you can essentially distribute your content through just posting on Instagram saying, I got a new album, check it out here through this link, and then say it's a Web3 platform. Because distribution is not an issue, they can really focus in on margin. If they're getting a better margin through some of these Web3 applications, I think they're going to be the ones that do it first. For people like us, where we want to get distributed through a platform like Spotify, there's probably going to be less of an incentive to do that.
Yeah, it's also tough because I think there's, like obviously there's the on-ramp to it. The second thing is like, most people just don't care about the underlying tech when they're just trying to get something done. Like if I'm trying to listen to music, I don't care whether it's hosted on AWS or Azure or Google Cloud or whatever, and how that impacts me. Like I just want to listen to music. So I think in the same way, again, like analogous with you using ChatGPT, you don't care how many parameters, how verbose or like the temperature of the model, which is something like all these things you can fine tune, how many tokens it can process. You just care about getting an answer and you care about like the quality of that answer, not what model's being used and the parameters of that model. And I think that's like a challenge with like crypto is like most people won't really care about like what chain it's being hosted on. So you kind of need to abstract all of that away, which they haven't done yet.
Okay, Albert, what do we want to have a look at next?
I think, you know, we haven't specifically talked about Binance yet, which we were going to talk about at the start of the app. So maybe let's do a quick wrap on Binance. And so like they've been in the news a lot and the commission and regulators looking pretty closely at Binance. I think, is this going to be the end of exchanges like Binance?
No, there's always going to be a place for these exchanges. And I think what kind of led me to that conclusion was early on, countries were taking a country by country approach to crypto. And one of the earliest countries to essentially sort of ban it was China. But now you can sort of see they're actually lessening that stance. And through Hong Kong, they're opening up the ability for people to buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, and more stable crypto options, more sort of the well-known ones, not the speculative coins. And I think that shows a trend towards there's going to be more regulation, there's going to be more oversight, and I think countries will benefit from that in the same way that they benefit from taxing illicit activities by making them legal and under their purview. But the clear trend is going to be towards it's going to be strictly regulated. There's not going to be any more FTXs. And so I think for your, you know, dominant players like Binance and Coinbase, it just means that, you know, the Wild West days are over. And now they're going to really have to update their systems and protocols to get on board with the ongoing trends, you know, noting that Binance in Australia has lost their AFSL because of some of the ways they've been trading crypto in Australia.
Yeah, it's worth saying that, like, it lost its AFSL specific to its, like, derivatives business in Australia. I think the other thing, I'm always surprised when it comes to something like Binance, that, like, more people don't use Coinbase because that is, like, highly regulated exchange. It's listed. I wouldn't say it's, like, there's like a level of transparency. It's the US versus like Chinese. So I think there's always this like tension point around Coinbase versus Binance. And Brian Armstrong is on podcasts talking about why people should use Coinbase over Binance. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that shifts over time.
What stands out to me there is just a classic dynamic between two competitors where one has a broader offering than the other. Like the reason Binance stood out as an option was that compared to Coinbase, compared to FTX, they just had hundreds and hundreds of different coins, some worth, you know, almost nothing, but with the potential to, you know, have huge upside there. So really, that was the place, I think, for speculators. And with this big crypto winter, I think a lot of the speculators have been flushed out.
Is it like now that it's almost going to be regulated as an asset, like a financial asset, are like exchanges like Binance just a honeypot for regulators to come in and just like charge a bunch of people? Like, is that what it's going to end up looking like?
Yeah, I think it will. You know, I mean, but what we should be careful about there is just understanding that, yes, it's going to be a honeypot for regulators to come in and tax and have oversight, but it also provides safety net safeguards from the FTX situation happening again.
Oh, for sure. And like, I mean, it's funny because like a lot of people kept money on the exchange and didn't move it into wallets, which is like the whole purpose of it was like you move it off the exchange completely and into a wallet. So they're like, it is untouchable. But yeah, it just goes to show that people thought about it more as like a spiggy way to make money quickly. Then understanding truly what it was or is.
All right, Albert, I think we've covered this one off, so let's finish up there. Thank you for listening to the East Meets West podcast, a podcast about understanding Asia tech and how Asia tech affects the world. Subscribe, follow the pod if you're not already, and we will catch you next week. Thanks. See ya.